you described yourself as being kind of Joe, average American, but at some point you took a certain interest in Delmart Vreeland's story. I was wondering how you first came across the story.
Well, from the wilderness, Mr. Rupert, basically in pursuit of investigating the events of September 11th, 2001. Basically, I found the material that Mr. Rupert did to be highly credible with documented sources and what have you, and he seemed to have a great amount of integrity as far as his journalism went, and basically I stumbled upon the Vreeland case.
When did you first get in touch with Vreeland?
I can't actually give you a date, per se. Basically, I stumbled upon his forum, okay, via his Defense Fund website, and began posting there, and became one of his most stringent defenders, and he began to email me, and we began to talk back and forth via email, and he gave me administrative rights on the forum. And then we began talking on the phone, and he sent me a copy. He had a copy of his court record and some other material sent to me, and I looked into it. And, you know, basically, I'd just been viewing everything from, you know, what was sent to me and from talking to him and from what I'd seen on Mr. Rupert's From the Wilderness site.
He originally asked you to call him.
I can't remember whether or not he called me first or I called him first, but that's basically the gist of it.
Do you have any idea of what date that might have been?
Let me go through my email here real quick and see if I can't find the first date as far as a phone number being given. It looks like the first time I received his phone number was on 5/22/02.
What kind of things did you talk about when you spoke with him on the phone?
Oh, basically just that, you know, how you doing, how you hanging in there, must be terrible, man, glad you're doing okay, you know, and then it led into, you know, from that to how difficult it's been for him, and, you know, he feels alone, desolate, and what have you, and he's being hung out to dry by his government. I guess that's just the way it goes, but he'll be releasing all the documents soon enough, and then the world will know, and basically just building on the premise that was already established from the Rupert site and reinforcing that.
So, Cameron, just to clarify here, you said May 22nd of this year was the first time that you emailed him.
Well, no. I'd been emailing him before that.
But the first time you talked to him.
I received an email with his phone number. Here, I'll just read you the email real quick.
Okay.
Cameron, I just returned from the doctor's, went out after you called. Okay, so basically it was before this. The first email that I have from him is on the 20th that I have stored. So apparently I have talked to him on the phone before the 22nd. My mistake.
Had you heard any of the interviews that, let's say, I had done or Jeff Rentz had done?
No. I'd heard him make mention of them or what have you, but everything that I had viewed, seen, or, you know, any point of reference I had in regards to Vreeland was basically off of what he had sent to me and what I'd seen in the Rupert article and what was being posted on his forum, or actually not his forum, the forum that he called his. Basically, those were the sources where I've obtained all my information up until that point.
So, purely Vreeland perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. One-sided.
When did you decide that you were going to go and visit Vreeland?
Let's see. I went up, I believe, on the 30th, I believe it was.
So you drove up here from Columbus is your home, I guess we should mention?
Yes, just about 13 miles north of Columbus, yeah.
So the 30th of...
A town called Delaware.
The 30th of May.
I believe that to be correct.
Okay,
so that was a Friday.
Yes, I drove up on Friday, I spent the night, and I left to come back on Saturday the next evening. And basically got in Sunday morning and just kind of crashed that morning, and I had an interview the next morning.
Why were you going there?
Well, he said that he wanted me to come up to help sneak him back across the border. Okay, that's what he told me that the intention of my visit was. However, I never intended to do that. My intention for going up there was to meet the person and to see if he's credible, see if he was a real thing. And in meeting Vreeland, he seemed very hospitable, very intelligent, well-spoken, charismatic individual, seemed like a genuinely good guy. And in talking to him and seeing him in person, he's very, very gifted as far as his speaking ability, his ability to tell you things and to reinforce them and make you see things from his perspective.
What did you do while you were up there?
Well, basically, when I first got there, he said that he had a couple bottles of wine that were sent to him from Alan Greenspan, some imported Merlot from Chile. We cracked one open, and I had a couple glasses of Merlot with him. I think he had one or maybe two. And
this is the wine that is supposed to have poisoned him in the famous email that may be from Mike Rupert.
Yeah, according to Vreeland, it was in the second bottle, which I guess he didn't open until the night I had left.
Alan Greenspan's clever that way.
You'll have that. Yeah, I like how he would just send a crate of wine. Love Alan Greenspan. And
did you see any evidence that he had spoken with or received wine from Alan Greenspan?
No. And basically, kind of the way I always understood it is, you know, if you're going to have wine imported to you or what have you, it usually comes in like a wooden crate with stuffing and what have you. And I guess it's possible that maybe he did have wine sent to him from somewhere in Chile or what have you, and you know, that crate wasn't there. But no, I never saw anything to indicate that he had received it from anything other than perhaps local winery or what have you. But that's only speculative. I can only guess.
So you imbibed some wine at Chez Vreeland.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, had a couple glasses of Merlot, and then he gave me a rum and coke, and then I had three glasses of rum besides that, and then I had three or four beers. And as the evening progressed, because I was going through documentation that he was showing me, or, you know, alleged documentation, but documents, let's just leave it at that, and I was reading through those, and the more I read, the more I drank, and the evening progressed thusly.
Can you tell me what Vreeland's surroundings are like?
Basically, it was an apartment. I won't give the building, but it was an apartment that was furnished. Nothing great, nothing exorbitant, but, you know, not shabby. Not bad for a single guy, I guess. His computer system wasn't really what I would consider to be up to snuff to mine, but it was a system. It did the job, I guess, and He did have some pretty nifty technical gadgets, like I liked his phone. Pretty nifty. I haven't seen anything like it in the States, but not that I've been looking for one. But he had several pretty nifty gadgets or what have you, but pretty plain atmosphere.
Did he take any calls while you were with him?
Tons of calls.
What kind of things?
Obviously, I only heard one side of these conversations, so and to tell you the truth, I really don't remember who all they were supposed to be from. I believe he stated at one point one of the calls was from Rupert. Like I said, that's speculative. I didn't really try to keep a mental note of who all he was talking to or what have you. I was really more interested in the documents he had presented before me.
Now, Vreeland at one point on his website said that he was moving.
Yes.
Now, were you at the location that he moved to, or the location that he has informed us before that he lived at?
The location that he moved from. He moved shortly after my coming back, I guess because of the supposed poisoning incident or what have you.
Now, without revealing the exact building, can you describe the physical facility there of the building? How many stories, and what your impression was when you got there?
Oh, well, it was a nice building. Let's just say he was on the 20th story of this building, and I'm more than sure that there were more. It was a very nice establishment. It's just that the apartment itself was nothing that was overly plain, but by the same token, it wasn't anything exorbitant either.
Let's talk a little bit about the documents that you were looking at.
Basically, everything from emails, financial documentation that has been posted on the internet, a variety of things, as a potpourri of things, articles, just things left and right. There was quite a large pile of things.
Did they have anything to do with Vreeland's case directly?
some of them did, you know. Some of them were stuff that I'd already received and I'd already perused through and what have you. The one thing he did show me that was new at the time that I still have a copy of is the supposed Russian communique. I guess the only thing in retrospect and looking back that I kind of have stumbled upon about that Russian communique is that if it was received before 2001, I find it odd that there's a Microsoft 2002 copyright on it.
What is the communique?
I believe it's the communique where they discuss that's supposedly from the Iraqi communicating to the Russians, stating that the order of the strikes that were going to occur and what have you, whenever it's translated into English, and that they were going to be using small nuclear devices to attack their targets, and kind of describing the range of impact and the radiation fallout, this and that and the other. But the one that he showed me wasn't in English. It was the one that was in Russian, except that it was from a Microsoft MSN account.
And this is the one that he says is from K. Hussein to Vladimir Putin, right?
Yes, that's the one. And like I said, I still have a copy of that.
So you have reason to believe that may not be a genuine document.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically there seems to be a little date discrepancy if there's a 2002 Microsoft copyright on it.
Is there anything else that you want to tell us about that you did while you were there?
Well, like I said, you know, when I was there, he seemed like a very credible individual. He really knows how to reinforce what he's asserting to you to be the case, and I believed it. I bought into it completely, you know, and like I said, up until this point in time, everything in relation to my experience to Vreeland had come from what I deemed to be highly credible sources, and in fact, I still deem Mr. Rupert to be a highly credible source. You know, I respect his work immensely, but I've only seen that one side of things, and he basically said, yeah, well, you know, that's because that's the case, and here's more proof, here's more documents, check this out, what do you think about this? Plus, we talked about his military experience and what have you. I mean, not that I can remember a whole lot about what he said about it, just that he demonstrated that he does know some martial arts, and he's fairly affluent in them, too, I may add. I took a little bit myself, and he could throw me around a good bit. So, you know, he's definitely able to take care of himself on the street. But then again, anybody who looked at the Indiana police report could see that you don't get an opportunity to put your foot upside a trooper's face without knowing something. But
he offered you a job of some sort.
Absolutely. basically, as the evening progressed, it was getting fairly late. As, you know, a little after, I believe, 5 a.m. or so, and at that point, like I said, I'd had two glasses of Merlot, a rum and coke, three rums, and several beers, three or four beers, and he whipped out a tape recorder, began recording, and it's like, you know, this is Lieutenant Vreeland, number this, and this, sir, reporting to the UN, I have him from a rising legion, as he posts as an alias on my forum, individual's name's Cameron Sexton, and began asking me questions and what have you, and why are you here? And I was like, well, basically because, you know, I feel like it's the patriotic thing to try to assist getting you exonerated if you've been left out to hang by your government. We don't leave our own on the field to die. And he said, so what are you looking for me? I said, well, you know, I guess first and foremost, I don't want anything that happens to affect my family. I'd like my family to be protected. You know, I have a one-year-old daughter and a wife, and basically, just as a little side note here, I've always defined myself as a patriot as was defined by Thomas Jefferson. A patriot is one who loves God, family, and country, and in that order. Basically, I said, I want my family to be protected, and basically, I want to assist, and if you're really who you say you are, I want to get you exonerated and get you home to your family safe and get the truth out. And then he's like, well, I'm over this organization, you know, where we can financially assist you and help eradicate your debt. And, you know, let me see your debit card. And I gave it to him, and he mentioned the numbers on it and the bank and what have you, and said, well, hell, we own this bank. It's no big deal.
So just to be clear, though, you gave him certain information.
Oh, yes, yes. No, it's not like he got into my wallet and ripped it out and took it from me or anything like that. No. No, not at all. No, he asked for it, and I believed him, so I gave it to him. I showed him the card and let him read the numbers and what bank it was from and what have you, and he said, yeah, that's no problem. We own them, you know, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to help eradicate your debt, okay, and then we're going to get you a job. And I said, well, I've got a job interview Monday with American Express. And he said, well, American Express. He said, we own them, too. He said, I tell you what, you've already got the job, okay? So here's what's going to happen. Your boss is going to be on the thing, okay? So you'll work for them on sort of a part-time basis. You'll go in occasionally, make your appearance there, what have you. But your boss will be on it. He'll sign off on you as being a full-time employee. But in actuality, you'll be working for us. And you'll be helping assist in getting me exonerated and what have you. And, you know, basically, I want you to take these documents with you and when you go and help get them out and get the word out. And he said, not only that, but we can also set up a gifting fund, okay, from a Swiss bank account for, say, I don't know, I recommend we, and he's in talking. Acts like he's talking to an official above him. Like, sir, I recommend that we set up Cameron with a Swiss bank account with $500,000 and what have you. And I'm just like, well, wait a second. If you're going to set me up with a $500,000 account, that needs to be reported to the IRS. I mean, you can't just, if God drops a bag of money in my lap, Uncle Sam gets his cut first. You know, and he said, well, no, it's a gift, so you don't have to pay taxes on a gift or whatever, and I'm no legal expert or anything by any means, so.
Did it strike you as odd that he was offering you large quantities of money when he was more or less claiming on his website that he was destitute and needed money from other people to help him in his legal defense?
In retrospect, in hindsight, yeah, everything makes a lot of sense. But at the time, I mean, you got to remember, like I said, I'm fairly snookered. I've had a couple glasses of Merlot, you know, a lot of rum and a lot of beer, and, you know, I believed in this guy to begin with. And so whenever he begins presenting me documents, and he presented me documents showing me that, yeah, he did have this authority. Yeah, he is over all this money, and, yeah, you know, he can do all this, but I had certain questions about the legality of things, but he said, no, it's not illegal. That's not the case. And I was like, well, basically, all I ever really wanted was a job and pay my bills myself. I don't like things given to me or taken care of for me. First, I just wanted to wait and see what happened, if it was even legit. I still believed in him and believed in what was being said. So next morning we got up and we went out. We went to a restaurant that was located in his building, went downstairs and had steak and stuff. And he paid for my meal. And then we went and played some video games, shot some pool, what have you. And he paid for all of that as well. And I was like, man, you don't have to do that. He's like, no, don't worry about it. And I was like, well, thanks. Then I left that evening. And on the way back, just had a lot of time to mull things over, and I was like, if he's who he says he is, and if he knows if he's in intel or what have you, he obviously should already know who I am, what banking transactions I do, what have you. It's not difficult for anybody in the intelligence community to discern these things. But I was still giving him the benefit of the doubt, what have you, and I was just operating under the premise that, okay, I'm going to go to this job interview I have Monday at American Express, and if I walk in the door and they say, we've been contacted by officials higher up, and you've got the job, and here's what's going to happen, what have you, then I'd know that, hey, he's on the up and up. Monday rolled around, and I went into the interview. The interview went very well. It lasted over an hour, but it was just a standard, typical interview. So on the way back, I began to think about it a bit more, and when I got home, I cut up my credit cards and then called and reported them stolen and asked them to reissue me new cards, and then called Vreeland and said, hey, man, I just got back from my interview, and nothing really happened. He said, well, they should have given you something right then. You should have, you know, got some acknowledgement one way or the other wherever you went. I was like, well, that didn't happen. He said, well, I'll take care of it. I'll, you know, make some calls and see what's going on. And I was like, yeah, another thing, man. Whenever I was on my way back, I stopped at a gas station to get some gas and went in to pay for it, and I left my wallet in the vehicle, and somebody grabbed my wallet and ran off with it. And, so I had to report my wallet stolen. He's like, well, that's too bad. I was like, yeah, you know, and I just played it off like, yeah, it's too bad. You know, I had pictures in there I've had for 10 years, and not to mention business cards from where I previously worked to prove that I was a network administrator there, and my credit card, my debit card. Yeah, it's more into them bummer, you know, but I just basically wanted to cover myself at that point.
You wanted him to know that you had gone out and gotten new cards issued, so the information that he had would have been useless to him.
Yes, exactly.
Any indication that there was any unauthorized debits made from your card?
No. I called on that immediately, and nothing had went through other than any transactions I had placed myself.
Nope.
So.
This is the point where you have your doubts. When you get back home, you go to your interview on Monday morning. That's supposed to result in you getting this, I guess, good job.
Right.
And it doesn't go that way.
This is true.
So that's the point where you start to say, hey, maybe everything isn't okay here.
Yeah, I definitely began to have some skepticism at that point, but, you know, he and I were still talking, and, you know, I was still in my mind his buddy, his friend, you know, and it seemed like he needed friends. He needed emotional support or what have you, and I felt like this guy's been betrayed enough. I don't want to just bail on him. I owe the guy the benefit of the doubt until he gives me some reason not to believe him. I mean, because everything that up until that point has just been, well, what if? Well, what if? I didn't really think that he would do anything, but just to be on the safe side, because I am unemployed, you know, what little bit of money I do have to feed my wife and my daughter, I didn't want going anywhere else. So I was basically just covering my own bases.
When he said, or that financial institution is owned by us.
Right.
Who did you think meant us?
Basically, as it was stated to me, okay, and by some documents that he showed me, and I also have in my possession, he has power of attorney over this rather large financial institution. We'll just leave it at that. And when I say large financial institution, I'm not talking about a couple million here or there. I'm talking about trillions of dollars, and that's basically what those financial documents that are all over the web are pertaining to.
When you left your home in Ohio, Mr. Vreeland had made an assertion that he wanted you to help him leave Canada and go over the border. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was the premise for him asking me to come up.
Now, what happened when that didn't occur?
Well, like I said, I had resolved it in my mind before I even left that I wasn't going to do that. Let me put it this way. Everybody occasionally has a tendency to do something that may be viewed as immoral or unethical occasionally, depending upon a person's belief systems, you know, and everybody bends the law. I mean, nobody drives 55. Everybody tends to go 57, just enough not to get caught. But I don't do anything illegal. I don't do anything that violates my ethics. And so when I even left here, it was resolved in my mind that that wasn't what was going to happen. The reason I was going up there was to basically establish in my mind that this individual is credible or not.
Did he think that you were arriving to take him back? And did that just disappear when you got up here?
When I got up there, he's like, nah, that wasn't really the reason I brought you up here. I just wanted to kind of see who you were and feel you out, make sure you weren't agency or anything. And, you know, if you were, you wouldn't even be talking to me now. Did you see the car that was in front of you and behind you whenever you first pulled up? Well, they would have grabbed you. We just wanted to make sure you were who you said you were. I mean, I've looked into your background and what have you, but just making sure, you know. So I guess he just wanted to feel me out, and then, like I said, he presented these documents to me and said that whenever I leave, he wants me to take these documents with me and to begin to scan them and post them on the Internet.
What about the interview with his brother, Terry?
Okay, well, I didn't hear about that interview until after I'd known for sure that he was asking me to definitively contradict my ethics and possibly legal issues.
He asked you to pose as his half-brother on his website.
Yes. Basically, the way this all happened, okay, is that he and I were talking to Kalia from Kalia at RiseForNews.net on a three-way conversation.
Who interviewed him on, KPFA, sorry, in Berkeley.
Right. And we were discussing an article that a friend of mine from the UK, who goes by Burning Bush 666 on the forum, had done. The whitewash conspiracy that you can now find on the internet, that was written by him, and I'd forwarded that to Kalia. And we were discussing that, and then during that conversation, Vreeland seemed to be distracted by something going on the computer. Kalia said, you know, look, it's getting late, I gotta go, you know, there's a couple other things I want you guys to send to me, and she got off the phone, and then Vreeland called me back. And during him talking to me that evening, he said, I want to create a little disinformation campaign here, okay? And he created Terry Weems 3, and he was trying to log in and make it appear as if posts from that account were coming from a different IP address, trying to spoof an IP address, okay? And I basically sat on the phone with him for an hour plus listening to him try to do this, which, by the way, anybody with any technical aptitude who knows what they're doing, I personally can do that in 2 minutes. I know sixth graders who can do that. It doesn't take an hour to do that.
And you're saying that this is indicative of his technical prowess?
Yeah. I'm saying anybody who created the Star Wars program should be able to spoof an IP address. But basically, he fought with this thing for about an hour or so. And he said, look, here's what we're going to do. I want you to log in as Terry Weems 3, okay, and then I want you to make a post. And then that way, it'll appear as if it came from another ISP. And I said, I can't do that. And he said, what do you mean you can't do that? And I said, well, that's fraud. He said, how's that fraud, Cameron? And I said, well, how is me logging in, representing myself as being another individual and posting as them not fraudulent? He said, Jesus Christ, Cameron, and just basically began to express disappointment in me at that point. So I began to question him again about some of the things he had said about the job thing happening and, you know, my debt eradication and this, that, and the other. He said, well, you know, if you hadn't lost your debit card and your credit card, that had already been taken care of. And I was like, well, okay. Basically, at that point in my mind, once he asked me to log in as that other individual, it was over. I knew that my trust had been misplaced in this individual as far as I was concerned. Anybody who makes an assertion and then their actions contradict that assertion are immediately suspect in my mind.
Any contact from Vreeland after this point?
Oh yeah, I you know, I played it kind of cool, you know, just, well, you know, it's no big thing, man, you know, like I said, I really don't want money from you anyway, I really would prefer just to have a job, pay my own bills, I don't want a handout, so it's no big thing, brother, don't worry about it, and, you know, I'll talk to you tomorrow, and basically the next day, I began to talk to some people who I know also talked to Vreeland, and began to put some pieces of the puzzle together. And that day I happened to stumble across your all site and some of your audio interviews, and I heard the audio interview that had incited him to try to create the Terry Weems 3 account. It was the Terry Weems interview you guys had done.
You've come out on his site, I believe, and said all these things, that you've lost trust in Vreeland, that you realized that your allegiance was misplaced.
Well, I didn't.
Or have you?
I didn't actually post that on his site. basically, I spoke to the person who was paying for the site, not only the Easy Board forum which he was using, which, it, like I said, it wasn't his. Somebody else was paying for that, and also paying for his website defense fund site, as it's been explained to me by this person. And I spoke with them, and that person made a post saying, as of this date, I'm going to be removing this forum, and I'll be creating a new forum, and I'm going to be linking this to unanswered questions.org, and this new forum will have nothing to do with Vreeland. And I spoke to her, and I said, look, I'm one of the administrators. Do you want me to remove his account? And she said, yeah, do it. So I pulled the LT Vreeland account, except there was one little problem. Only her and him had the EasyBoard SysOp password for that forum, and she neglected to give it to me, and I neglected to ask. So after pulling his account and banning his email address, I was trying desperately to get back in touch with the person who had paid for the forum, but to no avail, because he had already joined again under another account name and put in the EasyBoard SysOp password and then banned me, and then proceeded to delete the forum.
The person who you're saying was the person who paid for the site, and we won't go into who that is. Are you saying that they had lost faith in Mr. Vreeland?
I don't believe this individual had completely lost faith in some of the assertions that Vreeland makes, okay? However, this person began to be under the impression that more than one thing that was being asserted didn't add up, and I believe this individual felt as if they were being used. That was why they made the post. That's why I called and asked for authorization, and from there, it just all went downhill.
So this is occurring coincidentally with your loss in faith in Vreeland.
Well, basically, as soon as I lost faith, I began contacting people that I know were talking to him.
I see.
And I began asking them certain questions. And I was like, so did anything ever get promised to you and nothing ever happened of it? Well, yeah, this, and I was like, anything else? Yeah, what is this? It's like you begin to see maybe a correlation here.
Did the owner of the board have similar promises made to them?
I'm not sure what all promissory statements were made to this individual. I know of one for sure, okay, that did not come to be. The other one is speculative, but they were of the impression and of such belief that they decided to dump the forum and to change it over to something else.
So you mentioned you heard the interview with Terry Weems. In that interview, he speculates that he believes his brother is going to flee rather than face extradition. Do you have any opinion about that theory?
Well, basically, the 2 days prior to the big fallout, okay, over the forum, 2 days beforehand, he was gone the vast majority of that day, which is, you know, up until that point, I'd talked to him frequently. He would call frequently. And he said, well, yeah, sorry, man, been out all day. I had to go get some passport photos taken, which kind of struck me as odd, yet again, because if he's under refugee status in Canada, how are you going to get a passport? You can't get a passport. However, in talking to Terry Weems myself, it was stated that Mr. Weems has several false identities, some of which include passports.
Of Vreeland's?
Yes. Yes. Basically, at this point, I just call him Vreeland because it's the lowest common denominator that seems to stick. However, from what I understand, Delmart is his real name, so everybody calls him Dell, but I just stick with Vreeland. Notice I don't include Lieutenant in there anymore.
Okay, let's talk about Mike Rupert now. Mike Rupert is on a tour of Canada at the moment, stopping off in various cities. We've heard very little from Mr. Rupert about the Vreeland case, and he was a big supporter of the concept that Mr. Vreeland was an ONI operative.
Correct.
What are your thoughts about Mr. Rupert's behavior during all of this?
Well, my personal belief is that Mr. Rupert is very careful, and whenever he presents anything as an assertion, he uses documentary basis to do so. Anything that is non-documentary, he basically says, well, it's my belief, or in my previous experience and having investigated this and this, it's a similar pattern that could fit, basically leaving things in the realm of speculation that he can't at that point document. If you notice, it's been quite a while since Mr. Rupert has actually drawn a direct correlation of defending Vreeland, and also whenever touched on it, well, like, for example, in the letter on From the Wilderness to, I believe it was David Corin, is that correct?
That's correct.
He states that, you know, you guys say that my whole case hinges on Vreeland's credibility. Well, that's not the case. I've only written 6 articles about Vreeland, and out of the 56 that I've written regarding prior knowledge to the events of September 11th. Not only that, but from what I understand, in speaking to someone who was at the International Press Conference in D.C. on the 10th, Mr. Rupert spoke for, I believe, it was 25 minutes or so, and did a very commendable job, from what I understand, but didn't mention Vreeland one time.
You've talked to him, haven't you?
Yes. I made a phone call to Mr. Rupert, and that probably was ill-advised. I probably shouldn't have done that. However, at the time, I was still, you know, of the belief that Vreeland was worthy of my trust and what have you, and I was trying to assist in putting together a compilation CD of material to be presented at the International Press Conference in D.C. So I contacted Mr. Rupert to ask him if it would be possible to discuss some of the material I intended on including on the CD. And he basically stated that I could use articles from his site, and as long as it was okay with an individual in his office in San Diego, that would be fine. And plus, anybody on his site could look at the copyright notice that he has on the vast majority of his articles and sees that they're free for public or educational purposes. But there were certain things that he didn't want to associate with. And as far as what those were, we'll just leave that there.
Is there anything else that you wanted to let us know before we wrap this up?
Well, you know, basically, I find it kind of funny that I have an email correspondence from when I first got back, okay? When I first got back from Toronto, like stated, the poisoning event supposedly occurred shortly after I left, an hour and a half, couple hours after I left, or what have you, okay?
And you're talking about the poisoning that was written about in a post that was allegedly written by Mike Rupert, although we haven't received any solid confirmation that it was at this time.
Agreed, yes. Okay. And basically, whenever I saw that, I emailed Vreeland and I said, are you okay? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. I was like, that poisoning didn't happen to occur from a bottle of wine from Chile, did it? You know, I was like, nothing's happened to me, you know, should it? He's like, no. He said, laughing out loud, no, you're fine, but quick question, though. So basically, just saying, you know, no, everything's kosher, you know, don't worry about it. So I have since been made aware that certain individuals have been posting a correlation between me poisoning Vreeland. Another interesting thing about that email that was allegedly written by Mr. Rupert is that Vreeland happened to have syringes with the antidote there and was popping them in until a friend came in and, you know, saved him and what have you. What is this guy, a walking pharmacy? You know, he just happened to know what poison just off the top of his head, just happened to have the antidote there, enough syringes to counteract it quickly enough. And
he's alleging that the poison was clozapine, the same drug that was used to kill Mark Bastian.
That's what was stated in that letter that was allegedly written by Mr. Rupert, yes.
Did you receive a copy of that email?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you receive it before it was posted on that discussion group?
It was waiting for me when I got back.
Which
was already in my inbox that was forwarded to me from Vreeland.
And wouldn't you say that it was this email, the discussion about this event that really started to create a landslide
in a credibility lapse
for Vreeland?
Well, I mean, there are several things that seem to be questionable. I mean, ever since I've been on the forum, it's, you know, just hang in there a couple more days, and, you know, these articles are going to be posted and what have you, and that's been an ongoing thing, and I've yet to see anything that were these supposed hidden government communiques. Now, you know, in defending Vreeland, as I had in the past, you know, if there's operatives, if they were factual, if they really exist, and there are operatives out there in the field whose lives could be put in jeopardy, then that's understandable. However, a couple days ago, on the new forum, which I'm still banned from, I'm assuming.
Us too.
Oh, you'll have that. It says, hey, here in the next few days, I'm going to post these things. I've spoken to people about it, but I'm going against their judgment. I'm just going to do it. It's the right thing. Still haven't seen anything. This has been the same old story for quite a while. It seems like anybody who presents, you know, answers or poses questions that don't seem to have a quick answer for, they just get unaddressed completely. Certain individuals tend to get banned. In my mind, from what I've observed as far as the tendency of things, it seems like 9/11 happened, and he associates himself with that. You know, Gulati gets poisoned. It's documented either happened on the 22nd or 23rd, and then he supposedly gets poisoned. He gives documents to me that he wants me to put on the internet. However, I never posted anything myself. Because I was unsure of what they were. Okay, so anybody who was going to be conducting a radio interview with him or a web admin or what have you that wanted access to them, he would tell them to come to me, and I would send them to them, and they could post them or use them for the interview material or what have you. It just seems like not a whole lot really happens with him directly other than just basically being on the defensive constantly, never posting the material that is promised to be posted. If he's a technical whiz, he definitely should have the capability to do all this himself. I mean, supposedly his life's in jeopardy anyway. What else does he have to lose?
Or what are the most vexing questions you have now about how Mr. Vreeland even got to this point?
Basically, I'd still like to know just how exactly that supposed note, okay, that has a 37-page document to put that note in context, got put into the guard's custody and was open on September 14th. However, there are several possible theories as to how that could happen. Perhaps he just encountered somebody who had some information while being incarcerated or what have you. Perhaps, and obviously all of this is speculative on my part. I don't know. If I did know, if I had some factual means of proving it, the world would be the second to know. There are several different hypotheses that could be put out as to how that information came into his possession that have absolutely nothing to do with him being involved in an intelligence community. Yeah, that piece of it, obviously, still bothers me, and I believe that that's why there's so many people who are so adamant in pursuing it, because people of intellect, whenever they encounter a problem that they can't resolve, they tend to completely process it over and over and over and get into spin out. And whenever somebody says, well, hold on, I'm going to clue you in, I'm going to give you the answer, just stick around just a little bit longer, they do. I think that basically there's a whole little group of people that are beginning to fall into that. And as to why Vreeland does this, what he wants to gain from this, you know, whether it be public attention or what have you, perhaps the evading extradition back to the United States, I can only speculate. However, I'm of the firm opinion that whenever I'm asked to do something that I view as being, if not illegal, definitely immoral, then that person has lost credibility with me. And I was one of his most adamant defenders. I was one of the people who would try to come up with arguments for him. And it seems to me that this works in two ways. Those people on his forum who support him tend to help, you know, feed credibility to him while at the same time slap down the people putting up opposing arguments for him. Those people who have opposing views, okay, give him the things he needs to research, look into, come up with a viable, credible explanation for. However, there's a whole lot of them that have been posted out there that there still is no explanation for. There is a lengthy police record here in the United States. There's a whole lot of individuals who I've spoken to who are more adamant in their conviction of him not being who he states to be than I, and with, from what I understand, very good cause.